Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
With LinkedIn Jobs, we tap into a network of more than a billion professionals to help you find quality professionals quickly and easily for any role you need. Marketing wizards? Found them.
Software engineers?
Found.
That project manager I could never seem to hire?
And found. LinkedIn Jobs quickly matches your roles with candidates with the right skills and experience. In fact, 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. Post your first job for free and get started at linkedin.com/decide. That's linkedin.com/decide. Terms and conditions apply.
In Milwaukee Sports Talk Radio, there are the issues that we all talk about. And you, who have the final say, this is your show. It's Kim and Lavoie. Judgment Day.
If you've been arrested for drunk driving or any other criminal offense, call Kim and Lavoie, 262-796-1400. That's 262-796-1400. Or go to kimandlavoie.com. Kim and Lavoie, they're your best defense.
Now, the Wendy's Big Show.
105.7 FM, The Fan, 1250 AM in the free, radio.com. I appreciate you hanging out. Wendy's Big Show, 105.7 FM, The Fan. I'm Bill Schmidt, Baby Tausch, inside the Gene Wagner Plumbing Studios. Gary Ellerson, former Badger and Packer running back. Leroy Butler, Hall of Fame finalist. Steve Sparky Pfeiffer here as well. And now joining us on the Great Midwest Bank Hotline, this man ran your Milwaukee Brewers into some of the best years of Brewers baseball in this town. Former general manager of your Milwaukee Brewers, Doug Melvin, joining the program here today. Doug, appreciate the time. Hope, first off, everybody's safe wherever you're calling us from.
Yeah, everybody's good, and I'm listening to what we're supposed to be doing. I'm staying at home, so... great to have me on the show. You guys are really digging deep in the recycle bin to have me on.
Stop it.
Doug, we were thinking about it the other day. We were playing some of you introducing Craig Counsell as the newest manager of the Milwaukee Brewers way back in 2015. And it's crazy to think now Craig is the longest tenured manager in the National League. Just how, when you go back to that decision, what comes back into your mind?
Well, yeah, I saw that in spring training, and it was a little surprising. But no, Craig, when Craig left the field, he wanted to be in a position. I kept asking him, "You want to be in a position of where you can have an impact on a club?" And he wasn't quite sure at the time. I had him in the front office for a year and a half, and you know, I knew at some point that I was going to transition into a lesser role, and it was time to turn it over to somebody. And then you know, the managerial position was still, Ron Renneke was still in place, so he wasn't exactly sure, but he worked in the front office a year and a half, and I think it really helped him so he could take what he understood upstairs in, you know, player transactions and how people work, and to understand, have a better feel for that when he's down on the field. Or the other thing is that being a manager, a tough job down there, but I think in the end he just said he had made a decision between the two, and when I made the change with Ron, I went and asked him again, and he said he was ready at that particular time. He said, "I belong in a uniform," and I told him he could wear the uniform and come to the office if he wanted to, but he didn't want to do that. That wouldn't look very good. So I knew where he wanted to be, and that he's done a great job.
Hey, man, Doug, said that to the Green Bay Packers, but they didn't hire me. I belong in a uniform.
You wear a uniform? Do you wear a uniform into work there every day?
Yeah.
You no, only Pick and Save is where he wears his uniform into. Otherwise he locks up into a Giannis t-shirt.
Yeah. It'd be nice. But, Doug, I really wanted to say something about, well, nice meeting you and your wife. You guys are great people. But I like the fact that you took a chance on him because he didn't have managerial experience. And I think that's what we were hearing back then. Well, why would you get a guy with no, especially at the Ron Ronicky, you know, get somebody with more experience in the smallest market, but you took a chance and it was the right chance. I just appreciate the fact that somebody has to give somebody in America a chance. And I just appreciate that.
Well, I'm a big believer in giving people opportunities and even second chances and third chances in this business that we're in, whether it's football, basketball, or baseball. But No, Craig had the one thing. He had 16 years. He had 4 World Series rings. Anybody you ever talked to, he was the best teammate. He was one of the best teammates anybody ever had. And in his role as a player, he had some years where he was a full-time player, but in his role later on as a part-time player, he was watching and understanding the game from the dugout. He was already managing in his own mind probably his last 2 or 3 years of playing. And I think that all helped him to be able to step in and manage, without that experience of going to the minor leagues. And I think the other thing is, and this is one of the biggest things, is I think he had the respect of players. And it was time that to give someone who the players, he wasn't too far away from a lot of the players that were coming along in the game. They knew who Craig Counsell was. They were familiar with him. He's an easy story to talk about. And he deserved that chance, and it's turned out well for the Brewers.
Hey, Doug, when you were general manager, how much interaction, say, did you have day-to-day with the lineup, roster decisions, and stuff like that versus the manager that you may have had in the dugout at that time?
Yeah, I didn't. I sort of left it up to the managers, but I would have a daily discussion with the managers, coaches. I never went down after games. And I think today things change. As in every sport or every business, things change. But I never, ever went down after games to talk to the manager. I always waited until the next day. I always felt if they won, let the players enjoy winning. And if they lost, they didn't need another grumpy face down there to just rehash why we lost the game. That can be done the next day. I just wasn't comfortable doing that after games that night. But as far as lineups go and that, the managers would suggest it to me, whether it was Ned or whether it was Ron, whether Ken Mock, whatever. They suggest lineups, but I would let them do it. And if I felt that it wasn't working, I would suggest to them, I'd say, hey, what about trying this? Or I would strongly, and I would then I'd go the next time, and I would say, I strongly suggest this. Let's give this a try. And that, but I never ever forced them to do it. And in that regard, but we always had discussions. When you're playing baseball, you're there at the ballpark every day, so you had those discussions and that. But I never did that. And I know the game's changed today. Same as pitching, you're starting pitching. That we always had the discussions, but. The game, I always felt that the bullpens are run differently today, but the game dictates how you're going to use your bullpen a lot of times. You'd like to have the best plan ever and say, this guy's the fifth inning, sixth inning, seventh inning, eighth inning. But the game will dictate what the manager has to do in that particular time. So you have to trust the guy you hire, or you shouldn't hire him.
Right. Sure. And Doug, though, how difficult is it, though? I mean, you're in one of the smallest markets. And to try to keep players and pay players and try to keep everything in line. How difficult is it to try to form a team around that? You saw the Brewers. They just paid Christian Yelich a lot of money. Then they're trying to build around that and still trying to keep a competitive team. How tough is that to do?
Yeah, it's tough in this market. But, you don't ever want to use the market as an excuse in that, because we have the great best fans in sports. They come out here every year and support us. But it was tough. You know, when I was general manager, And I want to applaud Mark Attanasio, David Stearns, the council, and everybody, and Christian Yelich for taking that step and staying here, because it was well needed by this organization, by this franchise, well needed. But I went through a period where every free agent we had left us, from Carlos Lee to Zach Greinke to CC Sabathia to Prince Fielder to Francisco Cordero. Every one of those players left us and went on and became the highest paid player at that position. Prince was the highest paid first baseman. Carlos Lee became the highest paid left fielder. Greinke was the highest paid right-handed. Cordero, the highest paid reliever. So they left us to become that. And you just sort of, after a while, and Sabathia, the highest paid left-handed pitcher. But you understand that after a while, after losing Carlos Lee there earlier on. And then I remember I was in the office, and Mark Attanasio was in the office at the time, and we were talking about Carlos Lee, and we thought, we have a chance to sign him. He really liked Milwaukee. Liked playing here. We were starting to play better. He was a big cog in the middle of our lineup. And so I said to Mark, Mark, I'm getting some teams calling about trading for him. We can either trade for him if we think we can, or keep him if we think we can sign him. But I said, let's take one shot. So I called the agent, Adam Katz, and said, Adam, we're going to give you our best bullet here. I offered him 5 years at $11 million a year, which is $5 million or 5 years, $11 million a year, $55 million. And I said, if you could let us know in the next 48 hours, then we can make a decision from an organizational standpoint. He called back in 30 minutes, and I said, Mark, come on in. I said, Adam's calling back. He called back in 30 minutes and said, Doug, you aren't even close. And so I traded him by midnight that night, because I just felt that if that ever got out in the media that he turned down 5 years of that, it would be very difficult to get the trade package that you would want. But he was right. He got $100 million from Houston. We weren't close. We had $55 million on the table.
Oh, my goodness.
He got $100 million, so we weren't close. But, it was tough at that time. But those are the challenges of being a general manager and running a baseball franchise.
Former Brewers general manager, now senior analyst for the club, Doug Melvin joining the Wendy's Big Show. El Caballo, one of my favorites growing up. But also, I mean, you brought up Prince Fielder and even the CC Sabathia move. Doug, when you look back at those moments before making the deal for CC and then the 3 months that ensued after and the playoff drought being broken in 26 years, what goes back, what headspace are you in when you think of where you were on July 6th when you made that deal official with Cleveland?
Well, that was pretty exciting, and I think we went into it thinking that we had a chance for him, and I think we were going to surprise a lot of people. I'm not sure everybody thought that when CC was going to be available that the Brewers were a team, because it just wasn't part of the history over the past, over the previous 10, 12 years or so, 15 years, but it was probably one of the highlights, obviously, of my 20 years as a general manager career, and it was a short period of time, a few months. And the reason it was is because it meant so much to the city of Milwaukee at that time, because had they gone to the playoffs since 82, which is a long drought, 25 years. And it just meant so much to the franchise. But when he walked in the clubhouse, you know, we weren't just getting a left-handed pitcher. We got a great leader, and basically said, come on, guys, let's go have fun for that 3 months, and we did. We really did. And he fit in really well with a good group of young players at the time. And, it was one of the highlights. 2011 was obviously a big highlight, too. But from a player acquisition, that stands out for me, the trading of Sabathia.
You know, you talk about CC Sabathia coming here and the momentum that carried. I mean, he was immortal, obviously, in the second half of that season. Gary and I were talking about it the other day, having that party at the Summerfest grounds before he even played a playoff game. I mean, that has to be unheard of across Major League Baseball. To do what the Brewers did and the fans that showed up were remarkable as well. Can you talk about that whole experience?
Yeah, you know, it just, he captivated the city, you know, and that, and he was, you know, Milwaukee's a community that when you have players that stand up like CC does or like Giannis does, and that they grasp those players, and you know, the players enjoy playing here. But anything we did that year in 2008 was just exciting, and we didn't play all that well in the month of September. We didn't hit it all that well, and we just sort of rode on CC's back. But you know, when he went through town, I usually go to the ballpark and I'd come home at night, but I could feel the excitement driving home at night out to Mequon, and driving home at night after a win. You could feel the excitement leaving the ballpark every night after we had acquired CC. But, you know, I understand that he went and he would tend bar at a few of the bars down there, which was good. And there's a place called Joe Cat's that my kids always went to with their friends. And I told them if we ever got to the playoffs that I would go into Joe Cat's and act like an idiot, which I did. And so I went into Joe Cat's, which I hadn't been. It was out of bounds because it was where my kids went, who are adults now, and went with all their friends, and a lot of Brewers employees went there. But after getting into the playoffs in 08 and winning, finally getting there, I decided to back what I said and went to Joe Cat's.
So, Doug, was that straight from the field? Because you guys started the celebration there in 08 with all the fans right on the dugout, too.
Yeah, there was champagne in the body when I got there, and it was good. It was fun, but you know, it was the experience of seeing the fans and the excitement, and that's what you enjoy. Hey, we all get excited. We try to do it behind closed doors. We don't show as much excitement. I'm not one to show a lot of excitement, but that year I did. I sort of acted a little silly at times, but it was because it was contagious, I guess, from the fan base we had, and just very exciting.
Yeah, I wanted to mention something to you about opportunities. I remember we worked it out where you let me come to your office and do a sit-down interview, so I was very grateful for that. But my question is, what does the analytics department, or what people believe in the numbers and the old-time baseball thinking of maybe eye tests? Or is it you just need a guy on third base to hit 280, you need a guy at second base to hit 275, this guy hits 300. Is it all just analytics, or you still need the scouting department to see what they see in the field part of the game?
Well, I think you need both of them, and I think they're both very helpful. I do think that having the eye test is very important, because the part about baseball, or part about any sport, is the development and growth of the human body, and how an individual at 18 years old is not the same person when he's 23 years old. And that's why you have to watch the player. And the other thing is, I was reading, I got a lot of time I spent in my basement going through notes and stuff. But Leroy had an old NFL general manager, and I had gotten some notes from him at one point. And he said, what the most important thing is seeing a player against comparable players. I'd rather see a player perform against a comparable player one time than to see him perform seven times on his video, and that. Mm. And I think that's where the eye test comes in, is you just see players grow. Look at Giannis, how the player he is today, you know. And I stay in touch with John Hammond quite a bit and everything. And you know, I was wondering if the Bucks at the time, if they would have tanked or something those years and got the top three picks, would they have taken Giannis?
No,
I don't know.
Probably
that.
Not. Yeah.
No chance.
Probably
no.
Not. And, you know, when teams tank, you tank to think you're getting the best player. But I don't think if they would have tanked in that year and gotten the top three or four or five picks, they wouldn't have taken Giannis. And he was probably a risky player. But John Hammond had the eye and the nerve to take him. I guess we could say I use other terms, but the nerve to
fortitude.
Take him.
Fortitude.
Yeah. To take him at that particular time at the 15th pick, and he's turned out to be a wonderful player. And well, I remember when Jack Zirinczyk took Prince Fielder, and that was before I came here. There is all kinds of people that I remember. Oakland, in the Moneyball book, it said, wow, what a mistake the Brewers did in taking Prince Fielder. So I do believe you still have to look at the players, because Prince was a 17-year-old kid, and, you know, can he play at a higher level of competition? Because Aaron Rodgers is another one. Because you just have to see, and everybody has to stick their neck out there on certain players at times. And the numbers are good, because the numbers do show trends in the game. Trends maybe of a player, is he losing some ability or not? And I think it's very good to have them both. I do think that you see a lot with the eye, and I think you have all the numbers to either confirm what a scout maybe sees or to go against what a scout sees. So I think they're both very good to have, and if they're utilized right, and David Stearns has utilized both aspects well enough to go out there and play, have back-to-back playoffs. So, and Craig's very good at it too. Craig looks at the numbers. He knows how they work, but he also knows, he's been around long enough to know that it's important to use the eye. For example, Craig Counsell got a 16-year career. Somebody out there saw Craig Counsell and saw what he could do and saw how he played the game and how he went about his business playing the game and how the little things he did in playing the game. Maybe Craig Counsell doesn't get that opportunity, but somebody, some manager, coaches, and scouts saw the year in and year out what Craig Counsell could do, and he had a nice big league career.
Hey, Doug, about it from that perspective, what about when you start putting trade packages together? Obviously, we talked about Sabathia, but like the Greinke deal, which essentially some would say would help build the Royals into the World Series team they were for a couple of years, with Lorenzo Cain and Escobar and those guys that went over in that deal. How does that whole process work as far as figuring out you and your scouts and front office as far as what players you're willing to put in, what players you're not willing to put in? Because obviously, you know, front office opinions are probably a lot different than, say, Jim Callis's opinion, what he may have on your farm system as well.
Right. Yeah. You know, it's there's a lot of differences between some of the reports, and you go over the top prospect list, and you differ from what your scouts' opinions are or from your own opinion. You like to see the players. We knew we were giving up a really talented player in Lorenzo Cain, and Escobar is an outstanding defender. We knew his bat was probably a little short, but Lorenzo was a tough one to give up there, but we also were getting a pitcher we were going to have at least for a year and a half. But it's different sometimes, Sparky, when you're making the trades. Are you making a trade to improve your ball club? I think the trades we made for Greinke were, we made the trades because we felt there was a window of opportunity when we made Greinke trades and Martin got Sean Markham, and that there's a window of opportunity to try to win and that. And I think at that particular time, that's what that trade was about. Hey, guys, if we wait, we're not going to get a pitcher of his caliber again. And then we got Markham also as part of, he came over and helped us earlier on in the year. But, you know, and then there's other trades you make just to make a trade to say, I think this trade makes us better now, you know. But those trades were opportunity trades that we had to make a decision. Do we want to take that chance? We did with the CC trade too, you know. And those are opportunities to say, I think if you remember, I did have a quote, I don't know whether people liked it or not, but I said, I think we're all in on this year for the younger players that we gave up. And the other part is I trusted our scouts and development people that for them to go find other players once you give up some young players, then it's their job to go find some players for the next few years.
You know, you talked a little bit about David Stearns. You talked a little bit about Craig Counsell and the job. They're doing it differently, though, with the Milwaukee Brewers. I mean, they don't have, you know, four, three Cy Young guys that's going to be there in their starting rotation. I mean, he's almost coaching on feel of when to go get a guy, when to take a guy out. Maybe only go three innings. Just how difficult that is to do as far as a manager is concerned.
Well, as long as they're communicating together, which I know they do very well, I think that that can work. But if you have a difference of opinion, if one doesn't believe in the other, then it's not going to work. And that, but it's true, Gary. They are doing it a little bit differently than what I did. But that's right. Part of what the game is today. The game changes. All sports change, whether we like it or we don't like it. And that, you know, like I was from a manager standpoint. I think Craig and David are very on board with what's going on. They communicate every day. David's a hard worker. He's in the office all the time, and they go over. They understand the players and that, and Craig has the respect that he can sit down and tell a player, hey, your role might change, or he doesn't even have certain roles. Your job is to get outs. He talks about pitchers getting outs.
He does.
Your job is to get outs. It doesn't matter. You know, we may not ask you to get nine innings of outs. We're just going to tell you to get outs, and then we'll decide when the time has come and that. But it's worked for the last 2 years and that. So, but you're right. They're building what they've done. Probably the clubs that I have probably had a little more star talent at the time, but these teams today are built on depth, and they have depth. They'll go 45 players deep into the minor leagues over the course of the year, or claim waivers and make trades during the year and that. And sometimes we would maybe just go 35 players over the course of of season, but that's where the game has changed a lot too. There's a lot of change. The starting pitchers, you know, they don't go the nine innings anymore. They don't go eight innings or seven innings.
Right.
In that, but you know, I was looking. One thing is the game, the change in the game for me, the most that I struggle with is I'd like to see the ball put in play more, because I think when you have action, I don't think people will complain about the game being long.
Yes.
And I think if you have a three, I'm watching some of these, you know, we got enough time now. I'm watching all these old classic games, whether the NBA or NFL or baseball. But the game the other day was on in Detroit, and Minnesota had a one-game playoff. I think it was 2009. And that was an exciting game, went 12 or 13 innings. But the reason it was exciting was because the ball was put in play. There was action. There was guys thrown out at home plate. There was guys stealing bases. There was outfielders making great plays in that. And I was looking up the 2008 team that we won with the Sabathia team. We had six guys in our lineup struck out 100 times.
Oh, my God.
And in 1982, when the Yount-Molitor years, they had one guy struck out 100 times. That was Gorman Thomas. And we had six in our lineup in 2008, but in today's lineup, you'll see a lot of strikeouts. But
yep.
I think people will accept a three-hour game, three-hour, 15-minute game if there's action, if there's ball put in play, if the ball's moving, if runners are moving, if fielders are moving. And I think sometimes we look at the game and say we need to speed it up. But I think that's one of the biggest reasons why the game is slower, because when there's strikeouts, like there is today, there's more pitches being thrown, there's more dead time.
I'm just going to cut that and send it straight to Commissioner Manfred, who keeps thinking that the pitch clock is going to change the style of game and make it a little bit quicker so millennials can digest it a little bit more. Doug Melvin joining us for a couple of more minutes, former Brewers general manager here on the Wendy's Big Show. Doug, you talked about the stars that you guys had on those teams. Ryan Braun, earlier on, before spring training got halted, mentioned a couple of different times that this could be the final year that he puts on a Brewers uniform. For you being there for the entirety of it in the different role you have now, what has Ryan Braun in your eyes meant to this organization?
Well, he was there when we started turning this thing around. He's a great performer. He's still performing, but early on years he was an outstanding performer, and I love going back and watching the highlights on him and that. But I remember when Jack Zirinczyk drafted him, the one thing he talked about, he said, Doug, he said, this guy can really run, too. He can run. I didn't see him as an amateur. I relied on Jack at the time when we drafted him. And that was a pretty good draft at the time. It was Zimmerman from Washington. It was Alex Gordon. It was Troy Tulowitzki. It was Ryan Braun. And I remember I called Troy Tulowitzki's agent and asked if he would move to third base if we drafted him, and he wouldn't do that. So we drafted Braun because Jack really did like Ryan Braun, and I think it was the right move. But Ryan was a great player, and I had some really good players in Texas with Pudge Rodriguez and Juan Gonzalez and Palmeiro, Will Clark, and in Baltimore, Eddie Murray, Cal Ripken. But Ryan goes in probably my top five players that I've been associated with.
Now,
what he could do as an all-around player from running the bases, from hitting for power, hitting for average, and playing the game. And he had great instincts. He gets great instincts. You very seldom see Ryan Braun get thrown out at the bases.
Mm-hmm.
I can't remember him getting thrown out. He had great instincts on the bases. But, you know, except for that little hiccup in his career, he's been an outstanding player.
Doug, you mentioned Giannis a few different times. People saw you as a mainstay at the old Bradley Center watching Bucks games. How much fun have you had watching the Milwaukee Bucks this year and the run they had?
Oh, yeah, they've been exciting to watch. I like following the NBA. In fact, I watched the other day, I was flipping channels, and I saw the Lou Alcindor game in his first year as a Bucks player, and he was playing against the Detroit Pistons, who I grew up watching. But I enjoyed watching that game the other day. But, no, the Bucks, you know, the Bucks are very similar to the Brewers, if you look at it. They do have a star player in Giannis. We have a star player in Yelich. They have great depth, in the same way David has built this team, with great depth. And the depth that the Bucks have had is far superior to any of the other teams. And when you play the game as hard as these guys do today, with the injuries that take place today, too, that's the thing that bothers me about all sports today. There's more injuries than ever, and I don't know why. But the depth has become very, very important. And the front office of the Bucks have done a great job building that depth. And I think beyond Giannis and Middleton and that, they have some great depth, and I think that's the reason why they've been as good as they've been. And they've not only just won games, they've dominated most of their games through the course of the year. And I sure hope we get back to playing. I think we all will get back to playing sports eventually, but their playoff run is going to be exciting again.
Doug, appreciate it. This has been so much fun. We appreciate the time. And as you said, during a trying time and a different time, we appreciate some stories that you were able to share. Just an incredible time of Brewers baseball that you brought us, and even some better stories right now. Appreciate the time today, Doug.
Well, I hope in a couple, 6 weeks or so, we can get within closer to 6 feet so we can shake hands and bring sports all back to the community.
Amen to that. Doug, be safe. Appreciate
Thanks,
it.
Doug.
Thank you. Bye.
That's Thanks a lot, Doug.
Doug Melvin, former Brewers general manager, joining us here on the Wendy's Big Show. 105.7 FM, The Fan, 1250 AM, and the free radio.com app. Free. We're back after this on the Wendy's Big Show, but first it's time for the latest on the coronavirus pandemic from CBS News on The Fan.
Yo, VIP. Let's kick it.
Wendy's Big Show on The Fan, 105.7 FM, 1250 AM, and the free radio.com. I appreciate you hanging out. You are within an hour and a half. We are within 90 minutes away from voting, closing Steve Sparky Pfeiffer in round one of Fandemonium 2020. And we have some tight races, as a lot of people knew Kevin Holden and Paul Emig was going to come down to the wire. I don't know if anybody expected it would get as personal as it is right now, but a 1-16 matchup that people are getting upset alerts from Bill Michaels and the real BVS. Did you guys see BVS's videos that this Joker was posting out last night of him like dancing and wearing a sombrero trying to get votes against Bill Michaels? This is crazy what we've gotten in the pandering.
He was also on the Chuck and Bart show this morning as well. Bart had him on this morning at like 10 after 9. BVS was on there talking about his matchup with Bill Michaels and how he may not really like Chuck Freeman all that much either from something that happened back in the day with him and Gary. So, it was fun. It was a fun interview earlier
today.
Wait,
so Gary was a part of the reason why BVS doesn't like Freems?
From back in the day when they used to go up to Green Bay or whatever the case may be. Yeah, I'm not sure what all went down. But, yeah, he was saying there might be a little animosity towards Chuck back in the day when Chuck used to work in Green Bay.
Freems did not seem very excited to hear BVS on the air this morning. Like, there was definitely no love coming from Chuck Freeman towards BVS.
But Chuck doesn't remember him. BVS was the one that kind of put it out there, and Chuck's like, I don't remember.
I don't even remember this guy. Yeah, good.
Hey,
one.
Speaking of, but did Freeman talk about the ex-wife today? Or
that was no. Yep. No, that got apparently it got next, Gary.
And, oh, it did. Okay.
Good.
No, that's not good. That's disappointing.
Boss was listening to the Big Show yesterday.
Was he? Good. Well, we got a smart boss. Of course he was listening to the Big Show. I'm glad we put a kibosh to that, because there was nothing good going to come of that.
Oh, man. I totally disagree. Only
no,
good things could have
so
came
petty.
Out of that.
You guys
that could have
so
been
petty.
Such great audio we would have gotten.
No.
Oh, just I'm so disheartened that we missed that. But hopefully at some point we can get the dirty details as to why that did not work out here on The Fan. Wendy's Big Show, 105.7 FM, The Fan, 1250 AM, and the free radio.com. So tonight, voting will end at 6 o'clock, Stevie, and then as the commissioner of this, or the selection committee, then what are the next steps for fan voters that want to be a part of this?
That is the interesting part of this whole deal right now, because I've been emailing back and forth with our guy that put this whole thing together and was working with our bracket deal of how this whole thing works. And I asked him earlier today, I said, so how is this whole thing going to work here at 6 o'clock? Are we going to have the matchups for the second round? Will that post at 6 o'clock, or will it wait till post till voting opens at 6 a.m. tomorrow? And he said, well, because we're the first radio station in the company using this little tournament bracket machine, there really isn't anything to know for sure how this is going to work. He believes at 6 o'clock it will flip to the second round, and you will be able to see the matchups. That's what he thinks is going to occur. So we will have to wait and see if that is what occurs. And if it doesn't, then I'm guessing it will flip at 6 a.m. tomorrow when voting opens for the second round.
And now voting will be open for the second round, like you said, starting up tomorrow morning at 6 a.m., and that runs through Friday, correct?
Yes.
Okay, and then Friday at 6 p.m. is when voting will close for the second round of Fandemonium 2020, but still some time in there to get your final votes casted, and it's one set per email. That doesn't mean that you can't, you know, create multiple email accounts to get certain spots and get people into the next round, right?
Yeah, and people have been doing that. From everything I can tell, people definitely have been doing that. So, people have been doing that, especially for people they really want to get ousted in the first round, like some people on our radio station. So it'll be fun to see how this whole thing plays out.
Huh?
Well, there are some people that people really don't like. I mean, we all know who those people are. And because of that, people are trying to get 3, 4, 5 email addresses to vote to try and get the person they don't want to advance out.
People are doing that?
Oh, yeah.
This is intense, that was it, dude.
The first night and second day, Friday, or what was it, Thursday night, all day Friday, I saw people telling everybody else, hey, create another email address, you can vote again.
Oh, my God.
That's amazing stuff. That's the kind of stuff you need in this, right?
Oh, yeah. This has been way more intense than even I thought it was going to be when this whole thing started.
Okay. It is. It's starting to get a little. It's getting
then,
a little bit dirtier too.
Did you see the latest thing this afternoon? Wicket's got Ryan McGuire, who we had on the show yesterday, Harold PD, tweeting and asking people to vote for him in his matchup against Mario Tarabassi because he is now nervous.
Okay, now I'm not one to continue to throw stones, but Wicket's got to calm down on this whole thing, right? I mean, dude, like if it's this serious, then get into radio, man. I mean, come on.
Yeah. Well, he can't. I mean, he can't. He's got to be stay-at-home dad, man. He's got three babies. Yeah, sure. He can't. Trust me. If Wicket could be in radio right now, I promise you, he would be in radio right now. Mm-hmm. Guaranteed.
Wendy's Big Show here on 105.7 FM, The Fan, 1250 AM and thefreeradio.com. I appreciate everybody hanging out as we continue to pass along the news of the day. Toronto, the city of Toronto, putting out a ban on all public events through June 30th. And then also some more news, and this one comes from the NFL, that would kind of go against that guideline, which is now 91 days away from where we are here on March 31st for the city of Toronto. The NFL executives had conference calls earlier today in place of the meetings. And this from Jeff Pasch. Pasch is the executive vice president and general counsel for the NFL, said the expectation is that the teams will start the entire season on time. And the quote goes, am I certain of that? I'm not certain I'll be here tomorrow, but I'm planning on that. And in the same way, we're planning on having a full season. All of our discussions, all of our focus has been on a normal, traditional season, starting on time, playing in front of fans in our regular stadiums, and going through a full 16-game regular season and a full set of playoffs. That's our focus in that new playoff format of 14 teams. Also will be issued in here, Gary Ellerson, to start up in 2020.
Now, is that arrogance or aspiration?
I think it's more of aspiration and optimism. That's where I would go with it. What about you, Leroy?
I think it's a little bit of both.
Gary?
Yeah, I think it's a little bit of both.
Anybody else want to answer the question or no?
Yeah, I was just waiting for my turn. Yeah.
Well, no, I mean, when you look at what's going on, I think you're going to have some pushback, right? And they've got to be conscious of some pushback if we still got people. I mean, for example, you just extended it right to April 30th. What if there's another extension come out? Then what do?
Then you adjust the plan.
Yeah, you have to adjust the plan. So that's a problem that they have. I don't know if they can just jump out of heads and say, this is what we're going to do. Now, they're saying this thing is supposed to take peak, in the next 2 weeks we're supposed to peak out, and we'll have to wait and see after that. But I think when you look at what's going on and the NFL as a whole, I mean, Steve said this yesterday, that they're getting away scot-free. And because of the timing, it feels like they are, because they're still going to have the draft, and they're going to do it. I don't know how they're going to do it, but I'm assuming they're going to have televisions in guys' houses or something. I mean, I don't know how they're going to do. They have enough? I mean, I don't know how they do that. But they're still, business is still going just like it. They still operate just like they've always would. They've made some amendments to it. But I think at the end of the day, they may have to think about, you still got OTAs. I know we talked a little bit about this last week, too, is that these rookies that are coming in, how long is it going to take these guys to get up to speed? If you don't have these guys coming in to OTAs and doing those type of things, I think it's tough for some of these guys, and especially receivers, especially offensive linemen. Defensive players, not so much, but Leroy would speak to this. I think DBs will most certainly have a problem, and some linebackers will most certainly have a problem adapting to systems.
No question. Go ahead, Steve.
I don't know, man. I look at it and listening to everybody talking about it on TV today. I was watching ESPN on the NFL Live Show, whatever it was this afternoon before we came on the air. And it just seems like everybody seems to be in agreement that OTAs and minicamps are nice but not needed. That as long as this thing is ready to start at training camp, everybody will be good to go. Everybody also agrees those with new coaching staffs probably will be behind everybody else. And Sean Payton was on TV talking about it and said, yeah, look, if you're a new coaching staff, you're going to have to play catch-up. And if you have a lot of roster turnover, you're going to have to play catch-up. He goes, here in New Orleans, I don't have those issues. He goes, so we'll be ready to roll as long as we can start right around training camp and we'll be good to go. He goes, but I pretty much think we'll be fine as long as we can start right around the time training camp is supposed to start. And I guess I'm kind of in that same boat here, because with this last CBA that they just put together, my understanding is, and I didn't obviously read all 800 pages of it, but my understanding was that they didn't want as many OTAs. They don't want as many mini camps. They want less of that stuff going forward. So if that's what the Players Association wanted anyhow, and now you're pretty much going to strip them of all of it, not because you want to, because you're getting forced to, now we'll see whether or not all of this stuff is needed. Because if you get into training camp and the coaching staffs and players all agree that maybe we don't need to do all that other stuff between the draft and now, maybe we're fine, maybe all we need is training camp, the draft and training camp, and we're good, maybe that'll change the way things work in the NFL going forward.
Well, the younger guys need the OTAs for installation.
Bad.
Sure,
yeah.
The rookies do.
They need
absolutely. Yes,
yeah.
Agree.
Yeah, the older guys, hey, man, you going to bring me in, fly me all around, halfway around the earth to show me cover four? Stop it. Yeah, let them young boys go do that, man. You call me in. When do we get the regular season check? That way you can see me.
Right, that's the point, though. So if the deal in this whole thing is going to be, well, rookies, maybe they don't play as quickly into their rookie season. Maybe they don't get on the field in the first 3 or 4 weeks because they're still trying to catch up with verbiage and everything else. And maybe you don't see them till later on in their rookie season. If that's a sacrifice that has to be made in order to possibly eliminate OTAs or have fewer OTAs in minicamps, I think most veteran players would be completely fine with it if that's what it comes down to. And I think coaching staffs might be okay with it, too.
Now, coaches don't like – coaches want more time. That's why they want they love the OTAs because it especially the interaction. When you get a new coach like Matt LaFleur was last year, the coaches couldn't wait to just get there. There was a lot – the players were like, okay, we go through this all the time. I mean
– new coaches. Oh, just, I agree. But if you're talking about like a guy McCarthy in Green Bay for 10 years, I mean, I don't think it would have made a hill of beans difference one way or the other probably in most years.
Well, if you look at some of the coaches were saying against that, even when Aaron Rodgers was talking about – he was the guy to talk about the offseason pretty much – the coaches want more time. They want more time. Because they really ain't got a lot to do because the scouts taking over until the draft,
right?
Until you get the players. So the coaches want more time. The players like, I don't really need a lot of time to go if I already know the system. But for young guys, I feel bad for them though, because when you installation, they give you a playbook about 7 inches thick. And you got to learn that all the way into when you get to training camp, you can't think. You have to fly around, or you're going to be on practice squad, or you're going to play, or they're going to call you a bust. It's your choice.
Yeah, the older players were winning in that, and ultimately the biggest losers in the new CBA, especially with the practice being cut down, were the coaching staffs. How am I supposed to get a team ready to go with 16 padded practices? It's going to be a lot harder, and then you're going to have to learn a lot more via tape and the film that you watched as to what your players can do right in terms of what that you need to coach them up for. A lot of what Matt LaFleur talked about a lot last year, which he believed was more of his job, is I need to put players in positions where their skill set gets shown off, not necessarily what they can't do gets shown up. It's the Wendy's Big Show here on 105.7 FM, The Fan. Catch a buzz next with us here on The Fan.
It's time for the Beauforting Sports Buzz of the Day, where we discuss today's most buzzworthy sports story, brought to you by Milwaukee's most buzzed about beverage, 100% natural Beauforting beer. Go all natural and drink in the boff.
It's the Big Show on 105.7 FM, The Fan. Buzz of the day in Toronto, the city of Toronto, now banning all public events through June 30th, but updates have said, and some people claiming that it is going to be that sporting events are going to be able to go on. I don't necessarily know how that's going to work, More importantly, I don't know exactly if any sporting event is going to be played in anybody's home arena as it continues to leak out. More and more people drawing to the NBA that they're trying to find new ways to play in one confined area without fans. New York Post having an idea earlier today that the NBA could restart the season in one or two locations, whether it be Hawaii, if it's Las Vegas, Louisville, Kentucky has been brought up, even the Bahamas as a position as to where they would play the remainder of the NBA regular season and into the postseason, changing the playoffs. But one thing that we do know for sure is the NFL has decided earlier today, part of their owners' meetings, that they are now officially going forward in 2020 with 14 teams in the playoffs for the NFL here starting up after the 2020 regular season. We had this kind of conversation a little bit once the news kind of came out, guys, that they were planning to do this with the new CBA, and now that it's finally here, I believe it's a good thing that the NFL is going to try to cut in with an extra team in the or on each side in the playoffs with only one team getting the bye, and they also have some changes to the broadcast, Leroy Butler, that might have some people interested. But your thoughts on the 14-team playoff format that we now know is official?
I like it. I really do. More football. I mean, the new CBA starts tomorrow, matter of fact. And but you're going to see some 7-9 teams make it. I mean, it just maybe a 6-10 make it. I just don't know. I mean, but at the end of the day, you know, they're going to play three games on Saturday, three games on Sunday, and it's going to be exciting. It really is. I mean, you may see a team, you know, that gets really hot, get into the playoffs like we've seen them before, and go all the way to the Super Bowl. So I think it's exciting. I mean, more football is awesome because I always wanted to be more expansion with playoffs, but at the same time, that was part of the negotiation with the CBA, but now that's done. So you can through with that for 10 years through. So now I love the fact that you can see a team that, how many times we've seen, man, that team is good, but it just didn't make it. Remember the 11-5 year without Tom Brady with Castle? They were 11-5. They did not make it because of whatever. I mean, you're going to see a lot of that, and I think that's going to add more excitement.
Well, and I wonder, Sparky, if you have more of those times when an 11-5 team, like Leroy said, with the Patriots back in 2008, if I'm not mistaken, with that time being, and you have a team that is so deserving that misses out in comparison to the ones of like a 7-9 or an 8-8 team. I think you might end up having more where it is higher seeds and higher records missing out on the playoffs because, you know, the 7-9s are a little bit lower than I think some of us have thought. Your thoughts on the expansion of the playoffs as we now know is locked in?
I love it. I think that's the right move by the NFL. I think that's the right move by everybody. Everybody's trying to catch up to the NBA and NHL, trying to get half the field into the playoffs to try and keep interest from the cities that are involved in the NFL and Major League Baseball to be more interested in their sports at the end of the season. So if this now means in the National Football League you've got, you know, three or four more cities eagerly involved and rooting on their team and watching every game and buying more gear as it gets closer to the end of the year because now they have a chance to get that additional wild card, that's a win-win for the National Football League, and that's exactly what's going to occur starting this season.
One part of this that is strange to me, and it's going to be just on the wild card weekend, three games on Saturday, three games on Sunday. NBC and CBS will pick up the two extra broadcasts as the NFL already had that basically locked in. But this is the story at NFL.com, and this is where the cut gets brought in from. The league announcing NBC and CBS would broadcast the additional games. NFL Wild Card Weekend will include three games Saturday, January 9th, another three games on January 10th. In addition, CBS's extra broadcast on Wild Card Saturday, which also will be carried on a live stream on CBS All Access, the NFL noted separately produced telecast will air on Nickelodeon, tailored to a younger audience. Gary, that makes no sense to me whatsoever. Like,
I don't get that.
I get you want a younger audience, but if there's football on, most households that I guess I know of, the dad is or the mom is going to say, we're watching the football game. And whether or not you have the opportunity to watch it on broadcast television like CBS or NBC, where all you need is the antenna, not many people are going to have Nickelodeon to be able to flip right over to. That just makes not that that just does not make much sense to me whatsoever. If that's how you believe you're getting a younger audience.
Yeah, I don't get the Nickelodeon thing. I don't get that at all. I think when you start looking at, you're right, Billy. You know, you look at the younger. I mean, is it kids? Is it 10-year-olds, 11-year-olds? I mean, I don't know who's watching. Steve, your kids watching Nickelodeon right now?
Yeah, yeah.
They are?
But
which one?
But Jackson, the 4-year-old.
Yeah, but see,
but he watches more. But he watches more Disney Plus, and that's what I was going to say. This is what this is lining
Nick
up
Jr.
for. He's trying, Nick Jr., he is trying, or they are trying, Roger Goodell and stuff, are trying to figure out a way, if they can get this looped in, and if those numbers are big enough, now he's got a whole nother platform to sell to a Disney Plus or something like that to tailor their games to specifically to kids, that now Disney Plus can be a streaming service with a kid-type broadcast in order to wrap them all in. Now, to what level are they going to break it down, and what will it sound like and so forth? I don't know. I'll be honest with you, I'm going to see. I want to hear what it sounds like. I want to see what it looks like and see if, you know, Jackson, who's 4, by the time we get down there, 4.5, by the time we get to football season, see if it holds his interest at all. He already likes kind of watching football.
Yeah.
But if they talk in a different way, I wonder if smaller kids may pay more attention to it or not. Don't know. At the end of the day, though, I think this is a money grab. They're trying to set up to get involved into more streaming services, and if they can get into more of the kid-like streaming services like Disney Plus to make even more money, then that's what they're going to do.
Well, I mean, they've never been hotter. I mean, the NFL right now, I mean, most people say they're oversaturated the market, but I think you got to strike while the iron's hot. You can always dial it back, but when you can make the money, you need to make the money now. I mean, yeah, Steve, it is a money grab. The way you explain, I would most certainly get down with that. Well, make all the money that you can, and if it goes south, they can always dial it back, but you're going to have the games that you're going to have. The Nickelodeon thing, it doesn't make much sense to me, but I mean, if Jackson likes it, then he likes it, then maybe he gets mom and dad to sit down and watch it with them too. I mean, I think that's what they're banking on. So then they're going to get a whole new group of proper people, younger obviously, coming in watching the NFL. I think this affects more mothers than I do fathers. Because I think the moms are the ones to are apt to watch Nickelodeon with the kids. I don't know very many fathers, and there's some, but I don't know very many fathers who are sitting down watching Nickelodeon.
Well,
but normally the mothers are normally doing that kind of stuff.
But now that side of it, and I understand like the kid-friendly part of it, you want to bring in a new generation of fans. But for me, I just don't get, Leroy, if just because it's on Nickelodeon, it's still football. The content is still football. It's not sliming people on the Kids' Choice Awards. Like, that's the part of it that I don't understand. And I'm in the media studies that I've always had, you never want to tell people there's a less amount of ways you can find the product, right? These are all the ways you can find our content. You want to make it more accessible.
So this who's broadcasting on Nickelodeon? Right. Who's doing that?
Don't know yet. They haven't announced. I'm assuming it'll be some type of Nickelodeon personalities. I guarantee you a former player will be involved as an analyst. Gengalba guarantee you that.
I'm available, but hey, check this
see
out.
That?
See, here's the thing, and Garrett.
What's the thing?
Yeah, I agree with you. I agree with you with the mothers. Now, two things. As soon as little Johnny runs in, Mom, did you see that hit? That guy's laying on the field.
Uh oh.
She gonna cover his eyes. It's the reason why they don't have horror movies on Nickelodeon, okay? But I'm gonna tell you something. If one guy is involved, I'm all in. If Nick Cannon is in that room,
that would make sense.
I'm all in because that guy's brilliant.
That's because you love his
wife. Brilliant, 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 brilliant. I just like her music. That's his ex-wife, anyway.
Well,
Nick Cannon.
Understandably
Nick
so.
Nick Cannon will find a way. He's going to find a way to make sure, because that's his audience. That's his baby. Mm-hmm. Okay? He'll find a way for maybe not to replay hits.
For
like
maybe.
Those hits that knocking guys out. You won't replay those. The kid just missed it. But I see little kids with little 36 jerseys on 4 and 5 years old. They love Packers. Love it.
Sure,
love
but
it.
But I feel like
love
and,
it.
But
love
I feel like one of the reasons they love watching it is because they get to watch it with dad, or they watch it with mom.
Absolutely.
Or it's like
yeah.
it's the culmination
yes.
of it. I just don't see yeah. it being on Nickelodeon. Says, oh, we're gonna make a ton more money because we're on a kids' television network and not one of the biggest broadcasting well, networks in the country's history
the
of NBC.
All the little leaguers, they start playing flag football at 5 and 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11, 12, all the way up to when you're Muskego winning championship. They can start early. Of course, we know it's for money.
But I just don't get how they're making so much more money on this. Like, I get you guys keep saying it's a money grab, but where is the money coming from?
Billy, this is
advertising.
Right, exactly. But
once it gets pulled out after the first year.
But hold on
Go
a
ahead,
second.
Steve.
Okay, so Billy, how many people do you think will watch a Nickelodeon game? On an average game, how many people?
In comparison to how many people watch it on broadcast
television?
No, not
television? Asking how many are going to compare. I'm just asking on average. Do you think a million people, they'll get a million viewers on Nickelodeon?
I'd be stunned.
If they get a million viewers on Nickelodeon, they'll make a huge amount of money selling that to some streaming service after this year.
Yeah, I'd be
guaranteed.
Stunned. I'd be stunned if they make that much more. If they have that many viewers that can watch it on cable that can't watch it on broadcast,
Billy,
like that makes no sense to me.
That Chiefs-Rams game they just replayed the other night drew 400 and some odd thousand people for a replay. 400 and some odd thousand for a replay. That's more than I think First Take brings in on average. I mean, that tells you that is where the NFL is at right now. It's at a whole different level.
Right.
And like Gary says, strike while the iron's hot. And you know what happens? If nobody watches it and it fails, no big deal.
But
they just cut a deal with CBS. They're not out any money
if it
doesn't work.
But you're cutting into the audience. That's what doesn't make any sense to me. You're cutting into the one audience.
No, where, you're adding audience.
No, you're not.
You're
cutting
adding
into
audience.
Your ratings. You're cutting into your CBS ratings. You're cutting into your NBC ratings that
Billy.
You sell to the networks to make money.
The national championship game. How many different ways can you watch that?
One. They're all sold on ESPN. Whether it's ESPN1, ESPN2, whatever it is.
Right, but it's all broken up, right? There's like 10 different ways to watch that stupid football game. You can watch it the regular way. You can watch it with these two guys or those four guys.
Sure.
Or English, Spanish, whatever you want to watch. You can watch it whatever way you want. But as far as they look at it, they're not going, well, what is the number on ESPN1? Or what's the number on this? It doesn't matter. But obviously there's enough numbers on all of them to continue to do it that way that they've realized there's enough audience that wants to watch it all these different ways. They continue to do it that way. From the NFL standpoint, they don't care what the number is for CBS or what the number is for Nickelodeon. They're looking at it from, okay, this number is CBS, great. And we got this additional amount of money or additional amount of people coming in from Nickelodeon. I'm going to take that demographic, which is probably different than CBS. That's what they're banking on. That demographic, that number of people, and have that as a separate sales package going forward. And if you're CBS, you're fine because you're still got a huge number. You yourself don't think they'll even get a million people. If they get a million people, that still won't put a huge dent into what their rating number is.
Makes no sense to me whatsoever. And whether you want to say it's because compared to the national championship game, that's sold by the person that's already bought the rights to the package. You're selling this as a different rights package, which makes no sense why I would go to a client and say, here, I'm going to give you a depreciated product because I'm splitting it up between three networks. Makes no sense to me whatsoever.
But if Nickelodeon's numbers go up because of it, and they can sell all that additional revenue on a network where maybe they're not making nearly as much money, that's a win for CBS.
No doubt about it.
What do they sell all this? Where do they sell all? They're gonna sell all the toy advertisements on there.
No doubt.
The on there.
Yep.
They're gonna make a ton of money.
Every toy
you know, your kid. I seen this new toy. And it was that. Billy, you ain't got no churn. You'll know. I'm telling you, man. They try this stuff, man. They may just try it out for just say two games. It's gonna be way up.
But it's one game. It's one game that they're able to do this for. I don't know. I'll see it once it goes closer to, maybe it'll make more sense to me. It makes absolutely no sense at this moment to me. Great Lakes Dragway.
You're a kid. You know better. You're a little kid. You know better.
Great Lakes Dragway, pick a lane is next on The Fan.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.